and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. I can't do it. I can't do it. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. I don't want it to be Monday. It got hot. How you doing, Riley?
Doing all right, man. How you doing?
Come on, dude. Don't throw it back at me.
I'm doing great. You know, yeah. I had a productive weekend.
Oh, God.
Enjoyable weekend.
Oh, man. It got hot.
I know. So we went down to the Hudson, me and my wife.
And did what?
Walked around.
Oh, that's nice. That's,
yeah,
that's
went down
productive.
To the boat basin down by where we are, yeah. Near where we live. Yeah,
yeah, that's nice.
Got a nice
that's
little strip
nice,
and stuff,
yeah.
And, you know, my daughter was out swimming or something, so my wife and I had the afternoon.
Oh, that's very pleasant and romantic and nice to rebond with your wife.
Well, we had an open house, and we didn't feel like being there when people were going through our house.
Isn't that weird what happens? Because it's one of those times where you people are looking at your house, you're starting to sell your house, you got big changes in your life, and when you have a few hours to spend some time together, you really reconnect, because it's a whole new frontier happening.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to be sitting in your house while people come in and you look at them kind of say, like, get out.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, oh, yeah.
You're hoping one of them will say, I want it.
But don't you think there's somebody going through your stuff?
That's what I thought, yeah.
Because when I was looking at houses and we went into people's houses, the first thing I wanted to do was, like, let's just go check out what's in that drawer. What kind of people are these? You know what I mean? But this weekend was beautiful. I mean, it got hot.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I went down to Astoria Park. I rode the bike. I ran. I know it's hot because all my cats are sprawled out, and they're not running around anymore. You know it's hot when you walk in, all your cats are just splayed on the floor with no energy whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I don't like the heat. Now I got to hook up the air conditioner. I got to put an air conditioner in my bedroom. I got fans going. It's not enough.
Oh, the fans aren't good enough?
They're not enough.
Hey, let me tell you, the problem with the heat so far, and it's only been a couple of days.
I know. I'm not going to complain.
But the problem has been that there's been no wind.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I mean, it was like
I'll get
dead
used to it.
Calm.
You know what's going to happen, man.
Oh,
you
know what's going to happen.
You can smell the humidity in the air here. It just gets thick in your chest, and you just know that we're
stinky this morning driving down the FDR drive.
But we're not complaining, are we? We're happy.
No,
we're happy summer's
here. What a wonderful world. By the way,
yes.
We talked on Friday when we were at City Bakery about this Olympic thing.
Oh, that goes up for vote today. Or they're going to pass down the choice.
Well,
today.
They're going to say which cities are closest to the top.
Yeah.
Don't expect New York to be one of them. There's already one published report in a British newspaper that say the two are the two that I've been saying all along, London and Paris.
Some other big news over the weekend. Apparently the Air America Jim Earls had their first legitimate victory.
Oh, now see, you're going to say.
Their first legitimate victory.
Their others weren't on the field, so they were illegitimate.
And before we get into that, it was a forfeit on behalf of the New York Times. Didn't have quite enough people. Before we get into the victory of the Jim Earls and the news of the day, I want to thank all our listeners and fans that came down to City Bakery on Friday. It was quite a good time.
Yeah.
Quite a crowd. You know, it was very interesting to see the people that come out that see our fans. And then about 2 hours in, one guy walks in with
the bush.
This guy, like this, I mean, he must have been in
with
his
Shea 50s. Guevara.
He was in his 50s. He had the long hair. He had the beard and mustache. He had the circular linen glass sunglasses. Just walks in with a sign that says Abort Bush, and it's got a hanger there. And he starts walking around the City Bakery, and I'm like,
passing out stuff.
But right, we thought it was, it was a protest or something. But the weird thing about it was, to me, it just... The thing that epitomized the day is that no one said nothing to him for like a half an hour. It's like, dude, we're trying to have a radio show. This isn't about you. We appreciate your message.
Yeah.
But, I mean, come on.
Now put the thing down or get out.
No, he was all right.
No, he was cool.
That was his big message. And but he just stood there with the sign. And to me, it was almost like a parody of what the left looks like. 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I saw it again in Union Square. There's sometimes where I just have a certain amount of pain and sadness. I was in Union Square because it was nice out. Union Square, if you don't live in New York, is down around 14th Street. And everyone was out. And there are these five people that are anarchists. And, one of them looked about 60. And they had their signs. And they had, they looked very disorganized. And they looked like real caricatures of what people who make caricatures of the left say we are. And I think it's fine. I had a certain amount of of feelings for the situation, but it wasn't like we're going to win. It was like, oh, look at that, sad.
Well, you know, things have changed so much, Mark, because, you know, Union Square has a long history, going back over a century, of being a center of protest. Usually when there were protests, for example, after the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, when all these 100-some-odd women died, the protests always started in Union Square.
Well, that must be, those guys must have been there that long. They must have been hanging out.
And also,
after 9/11, that was a tremendous Union Square became almost like a collage of grief and protest and shrines. It was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. Yeah.
So let's get into this. Kalo, what happened at the game? Can you give us a blow-by-blow? The Jim Merrills, the Air America Jim Merrills. This is very important to the country.
Sure. We played a doubleheader against Business Week, and we lost the first game, by a very tight game, by one run.
Yeah.
And we played the second game with a vengeance. Like, we had the desire to win, and we willed it, man. We went 11 innings.
Whoa!
That's five extra innings. And we came down from a 6-0 deficit to tie it up. And, we went on to win. I believe it was 8-7.
Who had the game-winning hit?
That was Sonowi.
Sonowi, okay.
Our account executive.
That's right.
Yeah. The money man win again.
So the money man steps up and seals it against Business Week.
Yep.
That makes some sense.
And the salesman, Arthur, he played well as well.
Arthur played well, huh?
All right.
I picture Arthur he's such a, like, you know, he's such a well-put-together guy. I picture him out there with, like, real baseball pants and maybe cleats. And
looking like Mighty Casey.
Yeah, exactly. Is he? No?
No, not really.
All right.
But you know what? Everyone had a great game. Like, there were some great defensive plays. Like, Dan Pashman made some great pickups in the hole. Like, I made some great, you know, catches down the line. It was Nate, Al Franken's assistant.
Yeah.
He did really well.
Yeah.
It was a well-played game all around. And, it was great. We had an on-field celebration, our first one of the year.
Yeah.
We all mugged the guy coming home. We all mugged Arthur. Like, Brendan had, like, two guys on his back.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was like 1986 Mets all over again.
How long did that go on for?
Long enough to get to the bar.
How long did the other team go, wow, do you think these guys really won something here?
Oh, we actually did not like them. They didn't have, first of all, they didn't have any girls on their team. We had the mandatory two.
Yeah.
And
the mandatory.
Okay, for the first game,
I hate to break it, but softball is a girl's game, Chris.
Whatever, man. Yeah.
All right,
I don't see you out there.
Yeah.
All right, so the first game was fine. They had a bunch of Business Week people.
Right, right.
Second game, what's this? Two gigantic black men come onto their team.
Hey, what has that got to do with
nothing? It's just that they don't exactly seem like Business Week employees.
Uh-huh.
So I
they work in the mailroom. What do you want?
You know what? You're right. They do work in the mailroom.
Oh,
these gigantic guys in gray white.
How did I know that? I know the brothers work in the mailroom.
Huge tattoos, huge muscles.
Yeah.
I was like, oh boy. Actually, Chuck D.
Yeah.
He had the ingenious idea of walking one of them to get to a lesser white guy. And I tell you, it paid off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good
Chuck
strategy.
Chuck D. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was so close to going down the field.
Oh, really? How close were you?
No, I would have went down.
Astoria.
I don't have a mitt.
Yeah.
I gotta buy a glove.
Yeah,
because who's gonna lend me a glove? All you guys are on the field, right? And I was picturing myself playing some catch and hitting some balls, and I decided that it wasn't gonna happen.
We were all sharing gloves, my friend.
Really?
Yes.
See, I should have known that.
Well,
next time I'll come down.
Next time.
All right.
Sure you will.
So look, we're gonna actually talk about some relatively important things to the planet. We've got a guest who's going to address some of that, Betsy Rosenberg, host of Air America's Eco Talk, will give us the inside scoop from the weekend's UN World Environment Day conference in San Francisco. Also, in the news coming up, Walmart taking some hits. I'd like to think...
Justifiably so!
I'd like to think it's because people stop shopping there, not because they think their marketing plan is wrong. Also, some frightening stuff. If you think you're middle class, you might be poor. It's 15 past the hour, more, and we're going to talk about that in a lot more in a second. Air America Radio.
Al Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, king of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Long way.
This summer, kids eat free at Denny's when you stay at Super 8. See Super8.com for details.
All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
19 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's Monday morning, and if you're not making about 100 grand a year, you're falling under the wire. Isn't that unbelievable, Riley? Isn't that unbelievable that most of the people that get the biggest tax breaks in this country make about $1.6 million a year and higher?
Yes.
The people are going to be shouldering the big burden for the taxes, that the tax cuts are going to fall out on the next 10 years. People are making $70,000 to $100,000.
Yeah.
And the people that are making less than that are only going to get worse off.
That's absolutely true. Their incomes are falling.
We're going to get into that story a little more in a few minutes. Here's another interesting story that's coming out right now, is that the perception of the regular people in the world, myself being one of them, about what's really going on in Iraq is completely contrary to what the White House is putting out there. But as Bush likes to say,
put on a happy face.
Well, listen to this.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
You see, what were they clapping for?
Catapulting
the propaganda about Iraq is starting to dissolve. It's starting to dissipate. The truth is starting to come out. There was a congressional delegation that went out there. What was that, last week, Riley?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of things are coming out that are really contrary to what Bush's catapulting propaganda is saying.
Well, look, the military commanders on the ground in Iraq told some of these visiting Congress people that things are not going real well, and that, in fact, America is at least 2 years away from training a viable Iraqi military. That's 2 full years. Yet the Bush administration has us believe that they've managed to train all these troops since the election, and that these people are fit to go out and fight this insurgency with some degree of success. It's not true. It wasn't true when it came out of Bush's mouth. And as he said, catapulting the propaganda, polysyllabic words are starting to scare me with this guy.
Well, that's one of those weird things where you really see that behind the sort of the doofus charm and insidious confidence of our president is a very calculating politician. And what came out there was one of those weird moments where Bush, you realize, is very clear at what his job is as a front man for this neocon death cult band.
Well, yeah, and you know, the puppet master, Dick Cheney, said last week that the insurgency is in its, quote, last throes. Yet what are we seeing happen on the ground, Mark? Day after day after day, reports of suicide bombings, car bombings, roadside bombings. People, and see, as long as it's not, as it doesn't involve American soldiers, we kind of end up getting glossed over, and we don't get we end up in a situation where people don't pay attention to how many Iraqis are getting killed.
Well, but also, if Iraqis are getting killed, and Iraqi police are getting killed, and Iraqi National Security Forces are getting killed, that definitely illustrates exactly what these military personnel are saying, is that that just illustrates how far away they are from actually having an efficient Iraqi homebound fighting force there, which means the Americans are going to have to stay there to train. They're going to have to stay there to support. Clearly, as we were talking to some people about on this show, a lot of these guys are in advisor positions right now, but it's apparently it isn't working because, there, like you said, there are dozens and dozens of Iraqis being killed day to day there now.
Yeah, and the problem that America faces is that if the United States forces in Iraq begin to take the lead in fighting the insurgency, that has the effect of riling up everybody in Iraq, the Shiites, the Sunnis, and everybody else. Because, you know, the push is supposed to be for an independent, democratically elected Iraqi government, which would reconstitute the military. And if American soldiers get more involved, it essentially says that policy has failed.
Yeah, and exactly, and Bush is locked into that policy where all he can do now is commit and keep saying that, you know, we put a lot of faith in this government, and it's gotten elected a government, and it's a democracy, and we're on the way to good things, but it's looking to me like those good things aren't going to happen until he's out of office.
Well, see, and this is the amazing thing, Mark, about the Bush policy generally. He really is pursuing a very similar strategy in terms of the U.S. economy. All right, the economy's been up and down. It's been on this roller coaster. They just had some job figures the other day that said only 78,000 new jobs created for the month of May. But the Bush administration puts a happy face on it. That is what this administration does at home and abroad. put on the happy face, and hope that the American people don't wake up and actually look around and see what's going on.
Catapult the propaganda until he gets out of office. It's right now, not only is it lame duck, but it's cut and run in terms of what they've already accomplished in, as far as pilfering the U.S. government, putting legislation through that's going to compromise people in favor of corporations. I think it's time to start blaming Bush. I think it's time to start blaming Bush for everything. We can make a list of the bad policies that are going to have repercussions that are going to last for generations, but these guys are now slowly starting to just, you know, cut and run, count their money, and get out. This is the government.
Yeah,
you know?
And see, the scary thing for Bush is that just like with Social Security, in terms of Republicans turning on him, some of the people that came back from that congressional trip to Iraq were Republicans, and they're turning around and saying, wait a minute, what are you talking about the insurgency's in its last throes, Dick Cheney? You're nuts. We've just been over there, and that's not the case.
Yeah, and also there's reports now that came out on Friday, so nobody would see it, that confirmed incidents around the Koran at Guantanamo, around abuse of the Koran. But you know what? The language of this thing sort of irritates me, Riley. Just like, you know, they blamed that group, the small group of underlings of privates and a few lower-ranking military personnel at Abu Ghraib, you get this report on the abuse of the Koran that makes it sound like it was an 8-year-old party. I mean, water balloons thrown by prison guards caused an unspecified number of Korans to get wet. A guard's urine came through an air vent.
And splashed on a
detainee and his Koran. Came to an air. Why would they even bother writing that down? An accident? He had an accident with an air vent. And then there's this other one about how the soldier deliberately kicked the Muslim book, the Koran, and stepped on the Koran, and he was actually fired for a pattern of unacceptable behavior. But the guy who accidentally peed into the air vent onto the book and the detainee, I don't guess he's going to get fired.
No, you just got a verbal reprimand.
Yeah, and the water balloon fight, I guess. It just made it sound so ludicrous, so childish, that I don't believe it. I believe that there was a culture of abuse that was going on at Gitmo, and it went as far, it was just part of the environment there, and the abuse of the Koran was part of it as well. It wasn't child's play.
No, it wasn't child's play. And in fact, Joe Biden, senator from Delaware, says close Guantanamo because of these abuses. And, you know, at this point, Newsweek has been thoroughly vindicated almost in spite of itself.
Betsy Rosenberg will be here, host of Air America's Eco Talk, to talk about the UN World Environment Day Conference in San Francisco coming up next.
With Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Want things to be more open? I say, bring it on.
Randy Rhodes on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Mann here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Mornings Edition. It's Monday. I'm starting to wake up. Lactating mothers unite.
Uh-oh.
How does that sound? If you want to bring your boobs out for a good cause, lactating mothers and their supporters will stage a nurse-in today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-hosts of ABC's show The View and comments made on that show that nursing in public is, quote, gross and disgusting. The protest is today at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, where taping of The View takes place. We'll have a report from a woman I know, a friend of mine, who's going down there. My buddy's wife's heading down to the protest. Corinne Morris is going to be with us later in the show, but I think this is a good cause, and you know, it's always nice to be able to take your boobs out for a good reason.
See, I knew you were going to go.
All right. You know what? I'm not going to go too far there. But
it's something that a lot of women have to contend with. If you have a small child, you can't say, well, wait a minute, I'm doing this or that or the other. As long as you don't have pervos, trying to stare around a corner. So
but even that, it's only going to last a second, and a lot of these women are so good at it, you can't see anything.
I know.
I sat for 15 minutes trying to see. Anyway, Here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator.
Yeah.
Thank God we got it back from City Bakery. You know, they left it down there, and I couldn't believe it. We had to get it back over the weekend. So let's crank. I can't believe I'm committing to this. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. People who are at City Bakery got to enjoy Brendan P.W. McDonald doing that live.
Yeah.
Here we go. From the New York Times, members of September 11th panel press for information on terrorists. Members of September 11th panel press for information on terrorists. Translation, some in intelligence community suspect World Trade Center may be at risk. From Fox News, Amnesty Chief blasts secret U.S. prisons. Amnesty Chief blasts secret U.S. prisons. Translation, U.S. prison officials threaten to flush amnesty report down toilets. Ow! Yay! From Associated Press, octogenarian nabbed in prostitution ring. Octogenarian nabbed in prostitution ring. Translation, 80-year-old busted after asking undercover cop, who's your granny? Let's get one more out of that one. I think that one's got legs. Right. Bush announces bold proposal to fix Social Security.
We gotta get Danger Mouse in here to do a remix of that.
Oh, yeah?
I want it for a ringtone.
I know everyone wants it for a ringtone, but I don't understand what we have to do at this place called Air America to get the technology to get people to be able to download MP3s and to have that kind of stuff going on. I've tried.
Soon,
we're working on
soon.
It. It's unbelievable.
Soon.
It's gonna happen. Right, this weekend in San Francisco, they hosted the UN's World Environment Day Conference. It was a 5-day conference. Not very many from the U.S. government were in attendance, from what I understand. We'll find out from our guest in just a second. But the host of Air America Radio's Eco Talk, Betsy Rosenberg, was there, and she joins us on the phone from San Francisco this morning. Good morning, Betsy. How are you?
A little bleary-eyed, but you guys are waking me up. I'm really excited about the MP3 news, though. That's terrific.
I hope that happens.
Digital age.
Yeah, I think we could just step into it, finally. So what was the big highlight of the UN conference, Betsy?
Summed up with the 4 Gs, I would say. That would be the governator. He made an announcement about global warming. That's Mr. Hummer, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom, our illustrious mayor.
Yeah.
He is the proud mayor of the greenest city in the land. San Francisco voted the most sustainable city. By the way, New York made the top 10. We'll get back to that, I hope. A guy named Greg Nickels, who is the mayor of Seattle. I don't know if you've heard about what he has started, but it's basically a big screw you to George W. He started his own Kyoto Protocol in Seattle. They've signed on to the basically the same agreement that we didn't sign on to.
Oh, that's right. And he did this with
155 other cities.
155 other mayors are starting to take care of their own cities, despite what the administration is not doing.
That's right. But last but not least, the star of the show was, would you believe, Al Gore.
Wow. So let's start. It was great.
Fabulous.
Well, let's start with Schwarzenegger and move through to Gore. Now, Schwarzenegger is the governor of a very environmental concerned state, and this guy owns a couple of Hummers. What was the reaction to him?
Actually, 7 Hummers.
Oh my
God!
So how? I mean, this sort
not
of
hip- only that. Yeah. Not only that. He's the guy who brought us the Hummer. He's the guy who went to General Motors and said, "I think we should have a military style SUV." So we can thank Arnold for that. And that kept getting in the way. I mean, people were applauding as he announced these targets for California to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions. I couldn't stand up and applaud. I just kept saying, get rid of half of your fleet and we can reduce it by 2% right there. Just mothball them.
Why not all of them? Maybe you can get a Prius. He'd look kind of funny in a Prius.
You know,
he's bigger than the car.
He announces Hummers and you get Maria a hybrid, he would have a little more credibility with the Enviro crowd.
Yeah.
Now, Betsy, what did Al Gore say that moved the crowd?
Well, are you ready for this? He said that we, humanity, are on a collision course with our planet. Now, you know, stop the presses. I know that's not as big news as the baseball team and George Bush making an emergency out of Social Security, but Gore says we're actually seriously in trouble. He calls the threat of global warming an emergency. He says this is a threat, in fact, much greater than terrorism. He gave the same presentation 3 times, and normally when you see the same thing 3 times, you kind of get tired of it. He gave me goosebumps each and every time. It's a slide presentation, about 40 minutes long. He gave it to a well-heeled, you know, crowd at a fundraiser event, and he gave it to, you know, activists at the main event. And each time he got a standing ovation. This guy was unrecognizable. He was passionate. He was funny. He was sobering. It was a very graphic, detailed but at the same time, very compelling presentation about what's already happened, documenting glaciers that have already disappeared and what we're in for if we don't make an eco-U-turn pretty soon here. So you listen to this and you see the charts of what's going to happen with population growth. He noted that in his lifetime, in one generation, the world's population went from something like 2.9 billion people to it will go up to 9 billion. You see these charts and you just go, whoa, what are we doing? You know, why are we wasting a minute? And then, of course, you listen to our president saying that, what was the quote, got to keep repeating things for the truth to come out. I remember the day after Kyoto was signed, the U.S. being missing in action, he had a press conference. And when you wear green-filtered glasses like I do, you see everything in terms of the environment and it's your environment, stupid. But he, you know how he likes to say things over and over again?
Sure.
He was talking about the, you know, probably manufactured emergency of Social Security, saying, you got to acknowledge a problem before you can address it, Congress. He was talking about Social Security. You've got to accept the problem. Only then can you start to solve it. And I'm going, Kyoto.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello.
Yeah, he's catapulting his propaganda. That's what he likes to do. So now, do you think that Al Gore, like, he's been pretty consistent in terms of his passion and his performance lately. You think he's reinventing himself, gearing up for another run?
You know what? We in the environmental community actually hope not. We think he can probably do more good when he doesn't have the handlers. I mean, look what happened when he was running for office. Look what happened when Kerry was running for office. These guys both get the reality of what's going on with our environment, but you wouldn't have known it during the, you know, debates and the campaigning. This may be his ultimate gift to the planet, actually. If he could take this show on the road, I think we'd have a much higher, you know, eco IQ in this country, specifically on the biggest threat, which is global warming. I mean, there was talk about energy issues and waste reduction and water and transportation issues, sort of the, you know, garden variety green issues.
Yeah.
This is the big mother of all, you know, eco challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't see this presentation and not be motivated to do whatever you can, including, Mark, I was just waking up. I'm not sure which one. You've got your air conditioner blasting and the fans going.
Just fans. No air conditioner yet.
Okay. Well, New York's going to lose its seventh place as the greenest city if you keep those fans on too much.
The fans?
Didn't you say you have your fans and air conditioners going? I heard you at the top of the
air. No, I don't think he has the air conditioner.
I don't got the air conditioner going.
No,
just
air conditioning, just the fans.
Just the fans.
All right.
Yeah, and I'm having my cats run them on treadmills.
Keep them slim. Betsy Rosenberg, the president, did he send any representatives to this? And what does this say about America's participation in the United Nations generally?
Says we're in trouble, guys.
Yeah.
There was no one here from the U.S. EPA from Washington.
No one?
No one.
Unbelievable.
Not even a low-level staffer?
No, there was someone, a couple of public information officers from the San Francisco office from Region 9, but no one came out from Washington. And I have it on good authority from a friend of mine who works for the U.S. EPA in San Francisco that there was a word came down from, quote, on high, not to send anyone. For what reason? Well, the reasons were fear of protesters. You know, environmental protesters are really threatened.
Yeah, they hate it when they go to where there might be people that they didn't allow in by signing off on a voucher or whatever. Like you can't,
loyalty oath.
A loyalty oath, exactly.
Right, but the second reason is almost as good, and that's they don't like the UN. So it's like, you know, a five-year-old saying, you know, we're afraid, we don't like them, so we're going to keep our marbles and stay home. This is our government. This is your tax dollars at work. But I suspect the real reason, the subtext, is really that global warming was topic A at this conference. And if you, you know, have an administration that doesn't want to acknowledge reality, you don't want to be around probably to hear it and to get, you know, some flack.
Well, Betsy Rosenberg, let me ask you one last question. What is it that you think that this administration, like I always ask myself, it's like we all live on the same planet. Do they think they're going to evolve some other breathing system or different skin? I mean, what are they really thinking in the long term?
Well, I've heard two explanations. We'll one, find another planet.
Yeah.
And two, technology will save us.
That's yeah.
And three, more research needed.
Mm. Well, you're the host of Eco Talk, which airs on Air America Radio every Sunday from 7 to 8. You can go to www.ecotalkblog.com for some more info. Appreciate you being with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Betsy.
Greeting the red and blue states, one show at a time.
Okay. Great. Betsy Rosenberg, have a good day. Well, that's good. You know, it was nice to talk to her. We don't talk enough about environmental issues, and she was pretty peppy for the hour it was. Yeah, it's like
West
in the morning.
Coast time,
3:30 in the morning. So we're going to get back here, and we're going to get back to some of the news of the day. We're going to talk about how people who make under $100,000 are no longer middle class. You might be poor.
Yeah.
What do you think
broke.
Of that? Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit more. Also, Walmart taking some hits, and that's good. We want them to take more hits, and they just think it's because they don't have organic food. All that next after these messages, 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
I'm trying to form a song here, and I can't have the phone people or whoever's in charge of punching my buttons, you know, needs to get, you know, needs to get some cancer, you know, needs to find their own disease in their own mind, you know, and how happy they really are with their life and how content they are and how they're going to look to the sky when they die, you know, or are they going to be in hell? I got an inconsistent mental disposition. Now, how's that going to look in the deposition?
Next message.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Experts now. 800-396-9711. 800-396-9711. That's 800-396-9711.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Monday morning, trying to function properly.
Whoa.
Yeah, maybe that'll help.
There's that sound.
That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound for Monday's liberal agenda. Here we go. Write these down, folks. One, go to a cafe and order a six-egg omelet. Tell the waitress you're adopting embryos. Two, protest the horror of the latest prison abuse pictures by dimming your photo iPod to half luminosity. Three, to ensure that the Downing Street memo gets read by millions of Americans, ask Oprah to add it to her book club. How about that? Four, get as much information as you can about the Iraqi insurgents' giant underground bunker. Find out if anyone there created underground comics or underground house music or any outsider art. Five, today's phrase, just drop it in a conversation. Dave Chappelle was in South Africa, all right, being held against his will and having his wife threatened by the CIA. Wake up, sheeple. I got a joke for you. Knock, knock, who's there? The free speech police. You have the right to remain silent, and you better start using it or you're canceled for good. That's it for today on the liberal agenda. How do you like that? Do I usually end those in a different way? That was it, wasn't it?
No, with the wrinkling up of the paper.
with the throwing the paper in the garbage. Lactating mothers unite.
Uh-oh.
Lactating mothers and their supporters will stage a nurse-in today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-hosts of ABC's show The View and comments made on that show that nursing in public was, quote, gross and disgusting. The protest is today at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, where a taping of The View takes place. We'll have a report from one of the protest organizers. Well, she's not an organizer, but she is going, and she has helped facilitate this this protest. Caridwin Morris will be with us later in the show. And, hey, I just know that I'm telling people, I know there's some lactating mothers out there that are going to go down, but there's also those people that are like, I'm going. Well, I'm going to check that
idiots,
out.
Idiots, turbos. Yeah. There goes our Star Jones interview, though.
The hell with Star Jones.
I know.
Yeah, well, Star Jones in public non-lacking is disgusting.
Yes, you're right.
I can't stand her. All right, folks, there are 145,000 Americans in the richest one-tenth of 1% of this country, and they all make more than $1.6 million,
yep.
Usually much more. Their average income in 2002 was $3 million, 2.5 times the number that group reported in 1980, adjusted for inflation. No other income group rose nearly as fast. For every dollar earned by the bottom 90% of the population between 1950 and 1970, those in the top 100th of 1% earned an additional $162. That doesn't seem like a lot, right? But that gap has not only just skyrocketed. For every additional dollar earned by the bottom 90% between 1990 and 2002, each taxpayer in the top bracket brought in an extra $18,000.
That's right. And you know what this translates into? This translates into 145,000 individual taxpayers, the top one-tenth of 1%. This is like if you had 1,000 people on bicycles and one person in a Rolls Royce.
Right.
And they were running a race against each other.
But how are, like, people who, this is the weird thing, because I realize this too. When I was growing up, and I knew how much my father made, you know, he was definitely, you know, upper middle class. He was a doctor. I mean, that's the game he was in. But now, you know, it's very hard to know,
you know, just it's amazing to me how many people are making, you know, millions of dollars, and that people who are making like $70,000 to $125,000 are really, you know, are not, they're just barely making it.
Well, yeah, they are struggling to get by, particularly in the, if you're talking about geographically the East Coast, the New York area, the West Coast, Los Angeles, San Francisco, places like that where the cost of living is high, $100,000 doesn't get you an apartment in most of these places.
And most people are in debt. Most people who think they're middle class are really just carrying a tremendous amount of debt. They might be two paychecks away from really not having, you know, any money if they are they come after them on the debt. Now, the Bush administration has made it almost impossible to declare personal bankruptcy. The Bush administration has made it nearly impossible to sue corporations. Most people don't have health coverage that's effective. I mean, this administration has screwed everybody on this level, and the people that voted for him, people who honestly believe, there's this myth in this country that everyone's got a crack at the big dough, and you can think that, but in practical terms, it's not true. And if that's the reason you're voting Republican, you know, I have a sad feeling that in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of people that have had a lot of faith in Republican policy, and they're going to get screwed.
Well, look, Mark, during the 2004 presidential campaign, Bush kept saying, what about his tax cuts? That they are going to benefit the very same middle class that you just talked about. But consider this, ladies and gentlemen, especially you suckers who did vote for George W. Bush. 53% of those tax cuts went to people in the top 10% in income. 15% went to that same 145,000 top-end taxpayers. 15% of the tax cuts went to 1/1000th of the people.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and you can explain it to me so I understand it and people like me understand it. What about this alternative minimum tax? This was a tax put in place, 35, 36 years ago?
Late 60s.
To guarantee that rich people paid their taxes. But since then, rich people have figured out a way not to pay any taxes and hide all their money. So that tax burden is going to fall on the people making 70 grand.
Yeah, because they never adjusted it for inflation. So now people who are making between $75,000 and $500,000 are being subject to the alternative minimum tax, and it is wiping out their tax, the money that they would get from the tax cuts.
I mean, hell, we got a story here that says a grandmother, an 80-year-old grandmother, was running a prostitution ring in New Jersey because the Social Security wasn't enough to help her out.
Only in New Jersey, yeah. 80 years old, and the poor woman said, look, you know, I got to make my ends meet here.
And now Walmart's complaining. Oh, poor Walmart. They're not making their nut, apparently. And, you know, I'm happy about it. How's this hitting you out there? 866-303-2270. How are you faring economically? What are the dire straits that you're in, or how are you feeling the pinch? Give us a call and let us know. We'll get into that Walmart story up next. And much more stuff, lactating mommies, all kinds of fun stuff, Air America Radio. Six past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. Lactating mothers, today's your day if you live in the New York area to unite. Lactivists are converging on the View show. That's today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-hosts of ABC's The View and comments made on that show that nursing in public is, quote, gross and disgusting. The protest is today at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, where taping of The View takes place. We're going to talk to one of the protesters later in the show. My friend Caridwin Morris is going down there to defend and be proud of lactation and breastfeeding in public.
Yeah.
I wish I was breastfed, Riley. Also, momentarily, or in the next few minutes, we have Mort Mortensen will be out to disrespect the recently dead in the papers.
which is always funny. There's nothing not funny about that. Right now, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few of the highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's morning's edition, Cliff Notes. The U.S. admits a soldier kicked the Quran. The Pentagon confirmed that a soldier deliberately kicked the Muslim holy book in front of a prisoner at Guantanamo. To be fair, the Quran bounced off goalposts made of stacked Bibles, and the prisoners won the match 4-2. U.S. Army War College says the U.S. strategy in the war on terror is problematic. In the 3 years since 9/11, the administration has yet to arrive at a clear definition of the enemy or the aim in the war on terrorism. All we know for sure is after we arrest them, they rarely photograph well. They're rarely photogenic. Huh? Nothing. Get out your tissues. Saddam Hussein is depressed, says his trial judge. The judge says Saddam Hussein's morale has collapsed after nearly 18 months in the jail awaiting trial. He spends all day in the cell listening to Interpol. He's not eating, and he thinks he looks fat and everything. Newspapers recently published photographs of Saddam in his underpants and worse. Published some of his downbeat poetry. Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm lower than the lowest, but still above the Jew.
Ooh.
A new study by the British Medical Journal supports prescription heroin. For one, it should make standing in line at the pharmacy more interesting. No. You go ahead, really. You're drooling and you've scratched a hole in your arm. I'm just here for lube. Those are your morning sedition cliff notes for today. All right. So is there something wrong with that? So let's get back into this wealth gap story. This is unbelievable to me, Mark Riley, that the people, that the 145,000 people, the one-tenth of one-thousandth, what is it? The one-tenth of...
it's one-thousandth.
One-tenth of 1% of this country is making about $1.6 million at least a year, and probably more. That means that people, and not only that, they pay very little taxes because they hide their money and they figured out ways around it. So the average estimated tax, is that what it's called? The average...
The alternative minimum tax.
Is going to fall right on the people who are making $70,000 to $125,000 a year, which apparently now is just barely middle class. So I can't even imagine the kind of trouble and pain and dire straits people who are making, you know, working class wages in this country and who this administration is constantly legislating against.
Working class people in this country have become the struggling class in this country. Their wages have simply not kept up with the rate of inflation and the rate of costs. And we're talking now, Mark, about the bottom 90%. 9 out of every 10 Americans are experiencing this. And, you know, the Bush administration managed to get a lot of these same people to vote for them based on, you know, staying the course in Iraq and the general feeling that the economy had not gone totally south during the last recession. But what they're finding is this whole idea that the nation is growing again and there's been an economic recovery has been quicksilver for people that are making $50,000 a year.
Dude, I don't even spend money. I'm afraid to spend money. You know, I make a living. You know, I've got a house in Los Angeles that's a small, it's a modest little house. And I don't like to pay taxes either, but I do. But the truth of the matter is, I don't spend money and I feel freaked out. You know, I'm just trying to save, but you look at what you're saving, you look at the numbers on this paper, you know, and how many people are making millions of dollars, and like even what I'm making, I'm like, oh my God, when do you get to feel secure?
You don't get to feel secure. And of course, with, you know, all of these different American companies and corporations laying people off left and right, you feel even less secure. You don't know if your company's going to merge with somebody else, and that means you're going to be out of a job. You don't know whether, for example, if you're in the airline industry and every time the price of jet fuel goes up, whether you'll be out of a job for that. There are just so many variables in the lives of people who are, I believe, the struggling class.
Like all those people in New Jersey who were at the GM. Plant in Linden, like I just saw that on 60 Minutes last night. All of a sudden, bam, they're out of work.
Fort Monmouth, 4,400 civilian jobs are going to be lost when that base closes.
Well, here's something that excites me. The Walmart apparently is hurting. The chief executive said the world's largest retailer needs to lure more higher-income consumers with products like organic food and 400 thread-count sheets to improve sales. Ooh. Don't buy it, folks. What's really happening at Walmart is enough people realize that their labor practices are heinous. What they do to the community landscape is disgusting. They cause traffic jams. They put independent sellers out of business. They don't pay even barely the minimum
minimum wage. There's no health coverage. And they just sort of use the poor of this country by offering them, you know, reasonable prices, but the karmic price is high. So what I think is, and also, it's not a blue company. They're losing consumers to Target because Target is a better company and offers a little style along with their value. But I just hope, I hope to God that, Walmart continues to hurt, and I don't think that you should, I don't think you should shop there. Let's talk to Bob. Bob, how are you, Bob? What's on your mind, buddy?
Hey, Bob.
He wasn't in Manhattan.
Yeah, I'm a doorman on the Upper East Side, and I'm just, laughing because you guys are talking about people making 70 to 75 up to 120 that don't even consider themselves middle class. What about poor guys like us who are making $35,000 a year? And, I'm a doorman on the Upper East Side. I mean,
oh, my God, I can't even imagine the amount of contempt and resentment you must feel on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly the situation you said before, like, Mark, two checks away. I mean, I lose my job, that's it. The rent's gone, that's it. I'm out on the street.
Yeah.
My wife, my son, that's it.
It's just awful. But they're a pretty good union, aren't they, the doormen?
Yeah.
That's the
biggest thing about my union, at least, is that the health care we get, without that, I mean, forget about it.
Yeah, I mean but that's a great thing because this is a union busting administration. At least you're in, you've got a little protection there.
Are you in Local 32, BJ?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah, that is. It's a very strong union too.
Oh.
You had some problems with a guy back in the day, but that's local.
Mr. Gus.
Gus Verbona. The guy was making $750,000, and his doormen were making $35,000.
Oh yeah, besides the places he had on Paradise Island.
Well, thanks for your call. I appreciate
thanks
it, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Listening to you guys.
Oh,
appreciate
thanks, man.
It, man.
Yeah. Well, see that. Well, that's the case. What do guys like that do? And where's going to be the help? Where's it going to come
from?
There
is no help. That's the whole point. The Bush administration has put the help out of people's reach. That's the scary part. You're talking about, and there's another story about raising the bar for financial aid for college.
Yeah.
How are your kids going to be able to get educated if you're making $35 a year?
I listen to that guy. My heart goes out to him because I'm thinking to myself, where's the relief, And there is no relief, stop saying, What happens is these people are being pushed off the grid a little bit, and Bob's at least fortunate to have a good union behind him and at least have a little pension and good health care in terms of that particular union. But most people don't have that. Wayne in South Carolina. How are you, Wayne?
Hey, Wayne.
Yeah, hey, I want to qualify this by saying maybe I made some bad decisions along the way, but more like it was a lot happened in just a short amount of time. My wife lost her job, and a year and 2 weeks after she lost her job, she lost her insurance. I had my own business. We had a lot of cash.
Yeah.
We had a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Well, she was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I went through a 3-year cancer battle. I lost, when you count up the house on the lake, all my vehicles, my business, and all the cash, I lost $450,000.
Oh, my God.
Now I'm living in my van, and I'm trying to start over. And I would really appreciate it if my government could stop illegal aliens from coming in and taking my construction jobs and cutting my throats, because I'm getting really sick of it.
Mm-hmm. And what about the government providing some form of a safety net in terms of enabling you to declare personal bankruptcy so you can at least make a little get by and get rid of those debts?
Well, I actually did that, but most of my money was in a cash form. And basically, I sold everything off as I went along to pay the bills and to make sure she could die at home, which is what she wanted to do. I just barely did make that. And I guess on the flip side of everything else, I'll say, hey, you know what? Let's get back into court and change the laws back around and make it a little bit more favorable for us to come out here and unionize, because I would love to be working union again.
Well, thanks a lot for your call, Wayne.
Thanks.
Sorry
thanks
about your
call.
Trouble.
Yeah, well, see, and a lot of Americans end up putting this on, quote, illegal aliens, unquote.
Yeah.
In the construction industry, in the part of the country where he lives, he probably has a point in terms of just the number of people that are coming into the area finding work. But the other side of the equation is that illegal aliens are not the only problem that working people in this country are facing. They are facing an administration that ignores their issues.
Ignores working people altogether. I cannot wrap my brain around what this is. Adapt or die policy is that this administration has shown that they really don't care about working people, that they really don't care about people who are making less than $100,000 a year. All they want to do is infuse false hopes in those people that they can, you know, get the big payoff as well. And those people are driven by that belief because no one wants to look at themselves and say, I got nothing. No one wants to identify themselves as being poor or lower class. But I got to tell you something. You know, it's you people that don't think you are because it's all on paper. You know, everybody sort of crunches their own numbers.
Yeah. And what happens if the paper turns out to be worthless?
Exactly. We're going to get more into this Walmart story because I think it's pretty fascinating that this company is starting to take some hits, and I'm very excited about it. So that's coming up next. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
Hey, come on, wake up. Wake up.
Call us at 866-303-2270.
Why? I don't know why.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm listening.
1-800-243-1483. That's 1-800-243-1483. Call Stop Sign right now.
1-800-243-1483. 22 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I just want to tell people, because I know that our next guest loves to hear about this stuff, I will be performing it live at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, on Saturday, June 25th. So you can go to bananascomedyclub.com for ticket info, and maybe here at morningsedition.com you can find out, too. I hear it's a good room.
Not funny.
They got the big acts there. You know, Dom Irrera goes there, Bob Saget, now Mark Maron at Bananas Comedy Club in Hasbrook, New Jersey. Right now, unfortunately, it's not that time of week when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of our sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh. Thurl Ravenscroft, voice of Tony the Tiger. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice... I'm sorry.
Let's go, Tom.
Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice of Tony the Tiger helped condemn two generations of American children to a life of high fructose corn syrup and tragic obesity, is now buried in a grave! After leaving the Air Force in 1947, Thurl went to Hollywood to form a vocal quartet called the Mellow Men, which performed with Danny Kaye, who Laurence Olivier said was gay!
Oh, no.
Friends recall how Kellogg's cereal came to him in 1952, requesting he write something for the new character, Tony the Tiger. After thinking about it for a while, a World War II vet came up with the words that would immortalize him in the world of advertising. Human entrails. Oh, gosh. You're still wearing that eyeliner?
No, man.
You know what makeup... I'm allergic to that makeup.
I don't even know why I do it, man. It's because I'm on the radio. No one sees it.
You see yourself. That's important. A religious man, Ravenscroft, began narrating annual presentations at the Crystal Cathedral in Southern California. Was known for ending a show with the phrase, Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. They're great! But not as great as the Lord Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for your sins, dirty heathens.
You all right, man?
Yeah.
Maybe you ought to blow your nose.
Oh, God, you have a tissue?
Yeah, here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, man. It's that time of year, I guess.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's getting to be summer. Those who worked with Thurl Ravenscroft often called him unpretentious, while those who lived next door to him often called him loud. Men called the police whenever he was having sex. Ravenscroft requested his body be enjoyed every morning with skim milk and sliced bananas.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh, you've been inadvertently spraying the urine on the Karani here?
I think I might have a little bit through that vent over there, but it was an accident.
I'm allergic to urine.
Wow. It's not easy for you, is it?
Let me get on with it.
Okay.
Delay. Steakhouse chain founder Arnie Morton. Arnie Morton, whose string of fancy steakhouses showed the world that colon cancer wasn't just for the poor anymore, died last week after really proving his point. Morton opened his first restaurant in the 1950s, paving the way for his partnership with Hugh Hefner and fueling their lifelong desire to serve fresh meat to creepy old men. How long do I have?
You got about a minute.
A minute? Hey, thanks. Okay. Morton's first restaurant initially struggled until the time Frank Sinatra came to eat. From that night on, people from all over flocked to Morton's to taste the chairman of the board's favorite entree, scrambled eggs and bacon on warm breast of drunken prostitute. He requested his body be aged 2 weeks in a cooler until his remains take on a delicious cherry red color, and then cooked at 1,200 degrees to seal in its juicy goodness.
You're pretty bad this morning.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
This has been Morton's Insane. Who's chopping onions?
Oh, man. So, Morton, I'm going to be at Bananas.
Really?
I'm going to be at Bananas in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey on Saturday the 25th. You want to come down?
People are going to go insane and go Bananas.
Not Go Bananas, just Bananas. Go Bananas was in Cincinnati, and they didn't go that insane.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be at Go Zucchini.
What's that, a grief club? Is that a eulogy night?
Why aren't you supporting the troops?
Man, that's so wrong you to say. When we come in just a few minutes, we'll continue discussing Walmart.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Plus, the return of Amber Waves, the Republican stripper, a little eye candy and ear candy, too. Next time on Franken.
Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's time to whip your boobs out. Lactating mothers, unite! Lactivists! Okay, it's time. They're staging a nurse in today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-host of ABC's show, The View, and comments made on that show that nursing in public is, quote, gross and disgusting, which it's not. The protest is today at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, where taping of The View takes place. We'll have a report from one of the protesters a little later in the show. We'll be talking to us about that and what's good about breastfeeding. Like I said, I wish I was breastfed. My mom, at the time I was born and brought up, why are you looking at me like that, Kayla? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that in a weird way. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that that when my mom was at that point in her life where I was born, it was not cool to breastfeed. Yeah, they actually recommend.
Doctors would recommend. This is true. Doctors in the early '60s, mid '60s, they recommended formula all the time for every kid.
That's just breastfed.
You were? Oh, wow. Wow. And look what happened. That's cute.
He bruises easily. That's
it. I know. Look at little Kayla.
Oh, yay. Gee, I don't know, man. I think I'd rather be a crybaby than whatever you are.
Oh, really? Yeah. But I heard that
I used to love the fat guys.
Is that you? Did you used to love the fat guys?
Yes.
I knew this war would start again.
It's like it's so funny. It's such a radio war. But I think that if I were breastfed, I would have been more well-adjusted.
Really?
Yeah. My mother actually admitted to me that when I was a kid, she pulled me aside and candidly said to me, I just had a hard time loving you. I'm not sure why. And that's,
That's a couple of years.
Yeah, huh?
That's a couple of years of therapy.
Yeah, I think I'm still in it. No, I feel much better. I'm well-adjusted. I made a decision over the weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Which was?
I'm going to be well-adjusted. I'm not going to be a baby. I'm not going to be a prima donna. I'm not going to let my ego get the best of me. I'm not going to let my self-centeredness pollute my life.
Hey, we have a new office for everyone.
Yeah. I'm not going to snap.
you know?
Is this like one of those how long will this last pools, Kayla?
No.
I definitely have Wednesday at 7:15, all right?
Really?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's barely in. All right. So you know, Nick Hornby's going to be on the show in a little while.
He's the
author of About a Boy, Fever Pitch, High Fidelity. He's got a new book out, Long Way Down. I think he's going to... actually come in, isn't he?
Yeah, he's coming in, and me and him got something in common.
Your Arsenal fan.
That's right. He wrote Fever Pitch about my team, the Arsenal.
So right now we're in the middle of talking about just, you know, I felt so bad when we talked to that guy. A couple of cats called a while, in the last hour about their place in the world in terms of their jobs and what the hell this administration has done to working people in this country in terms of, you know, what are their options? You know, it's frightening. And we've got this story about Walmart, and we've got this story about an 80-year-old a woman who is running a prostitution ring in New Jersey. And, you know, then there's the so-called culture of life freaks who are going to great lengths to make embryos out to be full-fledged children. They even call collections of cells snowflake babies. And we found this help wanted in the paper. It's help wanted out in the paper, and we think it's part of their effort. It's our morning's edition Monday job listing. Wanted, teachers for Snowflake Baby preschool. We are seeking people who love to work with small children. Very small children. Okay, think paramecium. We feel that the perfect teacher is someone who can cultivate that special sparkle in a young person's mitochondria. Applicants should be able to lead fun and educational activities for children, all of which can be conducted inside of a Petri dish. Our teachers must be able to deal with rambunctious youngsters. Children at our school engage in the sort of behavior common among the very young, such as cellular division and basic metabolic function. Teachers must also be able to deal with the needs of a wide variety of young people. Some of them may be frozen. Others may be a piece of lab worker's fingernail that got mixed up with things. If you ever looked at the protozoa on a microscope slide and thought, how cute, then apply today. How do you like that, huh?
Ooh.
How do you like that? Morning's Edition will broadcast live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. We'll have playwright and actor Eric Bogosian and New York City mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields joining us. Plus, we'll be giving away tons of free stuff. You can sit around with me and a bunch of books. Riley's going to be in Disneyland.
Yes, that's correct.
Disney World. Yeah. But I'll be hanging out with Bogosian, and maybe some other friends will come by. We'll read some books.
You want me to cancel my vacation, man?
I don't want to let Vivica down. Otherwise, I'd be completely selfish and say, what are you doing, man? I mean, you're going to leave me hanging over the Strand Bookstore, but I want Vivica to have fun. And I think you'll have fun down there, too.
It's
going to be a good time with all this aggravation with selling the house and everything else. It's
going to
be a nice vacation for you and the fam. So let's talk about Walmart. Now, Walmart, I've been to one once because I was on the road, and I went in, and I didn't. I bought, I think, a soda.
But really?
Soda? That's all. And okay. I'm very against Walmart, as are many people, many of our listeners, certainly, because of their labor practices, because of what they do to local businesses, because of what they do to the local landscape. They literally build a malignant sort of Walmart's like the tumor of a town. It's like it's almost like you have a town, and outside of the town, there's a Walmart that's trying to grow into a town.
Mm.
But now, apparently, they're having some trouble. Chief Executive Lee Scott said that the largest retailer in the world, which is Walmart, is taking some hits from Target because Target brings in people that are a little more sophisticated, a little more money, and Walmart's starting to think that maybe they got to keep their bathrooms a little cleaner and manage the places a little more proper and also put organic food in. Don't fall for it.
Organic food?
I think this is a result of people saying, you know, to hell with you, Walmart. If you're not going to treat your labor properly, if you're not going to treat your workers properly, give them a health plan, give them a decent living wage, treat them like people. If you're going to not stop destroying local businesses in towns and cities across this country, if you're going to not stop polluting the landscape wherever you want and just dropping these sort of malignant town-style models. I look at as Walmart as a kind of capitalist tumor on the landscape.
You know, Mark, what's interesting about this story to me is that Walmart has become, over the last decade or so, the template for the way an American business is supposed to operate from a business corporate standpoint. You keep costs at an absolute low, you make your suppliers, toe the line on prices, and you're able to make a profit and, bring goods to consumers at a cut rate price. What's wrong with this scenario? One of the things they keep artificially low is the salaries of their workforce. And you're talking about people who make an average of $9.68 an hour, which is just over, just a hair over $20,000 a year before state and local taxes.
$20,000 a year, and we're talking about this divide between rich and poor being so extreme now that people who have $100,000 coming in every year are on the verge of, you know, lower middle class. I mean, most is 145,000 people, one-tenth of 100, 1,000, what is it? I can't get this number in my head.
One one-thousandth.
Of the population, 145,000 people in this country are making $1.6 million or more and paying the least taxes of anyone. The tax burden, obviously, falling on the people who are making $70,000 to $150,000 a year because they don't have the loopholes that the really rich have. And people who are making $35,000 a year, $20,000 a year, they're not even, they can't save money. They live life in debt. They usually don't have any health care coverage. They got no union protection.
Yep.
They can't declare bankruptcy anymore because of this administration. I mean, what the hell is supposed to happen to these people? Adapt or die, I guess. But what does adapt even mean? Where are they going to go? We need to reinvigorate the unions again. Things have got to, you know, be providing a decent living wage for these folks. What are they trying to do?
Well, I'll tell you, what I find as a glimmer of hope here, Mark,
yes,
is that if Walmart continues to struggle,
yeah,
then maybe this template that they put in place that other companies have tried to follow in terms of lowballing their employees, in terms of, you know, threatening their suppliers, maybe that template will change because it's no longer successful.
Right.
It's not working anymore.
I just don't even understand how the hell people get by. I wish somebody would call me and tell me the real sort of like day-to-day, you know, like we just talked to a guy who is a doorman here in New York.
Yeah.
He's got a good union, so he's got a health plan. I don't understand how the hell people who make $40,000 a year can get by with the dire straits that this administration puts them through, because you know, how do you survive? You're just chasing debt all the time. 866-303-2270. You know, just curious, you know, as to, you know,
I'll tell you one aspect of it. You pick and choose which bills you pay when.
Right.
So that you pay the rent X number of days late. You pay the utilities X number of days late. Because you have to buy food. And God forbid your kids get sick. If you're working for Walmart, your health care is minimal anyway.
Yeah.
And you're paying into that. So what do you end up having to do? You have to make really hard decisions and really daunting choices about what you're going to pay and where you're going to spend this little bit of money you earn.
Wow. Therese, listening in Manhattan. What's on your mind there, Therese?
Hi, Therese.
Hey, Mark and Mark.
How you doing?
Sorry, I'm just trying to choke down some cereal before work.
Is it Frosted Flakes?
Frosted Flakes?
No, it's that Kashi healthy crap.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's pretty good. They make a good cracker, the Kashi company. So what's on your mind about? They do, actually.
Well, I hope they pay their workers a living wage.
Yeah, okay. Right?
Yeah.
Well, so, I'm going to be a third-year law student this fall, and I'm in town for a summer job, and I am trying to figure out how I'm going to live after law school, because even if I were to get one of those fancy six-figure jobs that everybody wants, but only about 5% of graduates get,
right,
I have over $100,000 worth in student loans that I have to pay.
Yeah.
And I am on the lucky side of that because most people who went to law school at, like, a more expensive school owe close to $250,000. I know a girl who racked up $100,000 just in undergrad, so it doesn't even count sometimes what people owe in undergrad. So it's a desperate situation even for people like me who have professional degrees.
That's unbelievable.
Going to have a professional
degree. What kind of law do you want to do? Are you going to do the good kind?
This summer I'm doing the good kind. I don't want to tell you where I work just because of, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to get in trouble.
But I'm actually, what I really want to do is work for a judge first, like get a clerkship, and then after that I'll decide where I want to go from there. But
do you want to be a judge?
I don't know if I have the temperament to be on the bench. I'm a little too militant.
Uh-oh. Hey, we need a little more militants on the bench.
Maybe by the time that you're actually up for judgeship, the tables will turn and we'll need those, liberal activist judges really in there.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Therese.
Thanks, Therese.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, instead of that.
So she's struggling, too. And she's got, you know, a pretty solid career, theoretically, in front of her. And she's worried about how
it's
she's
the weird thing about law school, though. Even, you know, even with medical school now, there's no guarantees for anybody anymore that those jobs that people always said, well, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a lawyer. You know, I'm going to be guaranteed money. I'll tell you something. It's no guarantee with the way the HMO system is structured and the way the law system is structured that you're going to make that big payoff because of those jobs.
Absolutely.
Well, it looks like we got a few calls on the line, so we'll talk to more of you coming up next here on Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Good morning, people. Hope everything's going okay this Monday. It's a little hot here on the East Coast. I'm not going to complain, though. It's unbelievable. The first day of summer, people, yesterday, I consider it the first day of summer because it was the first day where I was, like, slowed down by the heat. I felt moist all day.
Yeah.
But it's like the first day like that, and immediately New Yorkers are like, wow. Hot one, huh?
Yeah.
Man, it's hot. It's like, it just happened. It's summer. It happens every year, and it's even a little late this year.
I know, but they'll be heading out to Coney Island as we speak.
Lactating Mothers Unite. Lactating mothers and their supporters will stage a nurse-in today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-hosts of ABC's show The View and comments made on that show that nursing in public is, quote, gross and disgusting. The protest is today at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue here in New York, if you live here. Where the taping of The View takes place. I'm going to talk to a friend of mine who's going down, a lactating mother, who is going to be there at the protest. I like promoting this protest because I think it's great that these women
You're twisted. That's why you like to promote this.
What a great protest.
You like the whole idea of lactating mothers unite. You know you like it.
Of course they're going to go down there and take their boobs out for a good reason. Not only feed the kid, but make a statement. I think it is wrong that those women on The View condescended to these people. I think that Star Jones should be embarrassed to go out in public anywhere, anyway. Lactating or not, look at her. She's like the black version of Divine.
Oh my God! Well, you know what? You may not be too far wrong. Now that
did wrong?
She jump up and down on the trampoline and shoot people?
Is that wrong? She kind of looks like Divine, doesn't she?
Come on, sorta. Yeah, a little bit with the pullback.
Yeah. Nick Hornby is going to be with us in just a few minutes. We're excited about that. We're talking to a few people on the phone here about the wealth gap. That if you're making some, you know, $75,000 to $100,000 in this country, you're barely making it. You're taking the burden for most of the taxes. If you're making below that, you're definitely struggling. Right here, we got a story from New Jersey. An 80-year-old woman was busted for being the alleged madam of a prostitution ring called August Playmates.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you use August Playmates,
you're busted.
You might want to go somewhere else. Apparently, she was running an operation that where she was taking $60 out of every $160 she charged clients for a 1 hour with a call girl. And she said the reason why she was doing this is because to supplement her Social Security check. She wasn't making enough.
Yeah, she took it over from her daughter. Her daughter had recently died, apparently. And, you know, apparently the cops even knew something was wrong because the woman had trouble breathing when they were calling to make dates.
Hello.
Now, they say that she could do 5 years in the big house for this, but they're betting on probation.
Who would you like to see today?
No, she's busy. Anybody else?
I'm available.
Now, see, there you go.
Sharon in Florida, what's on your mind, Sharon?
Hey, Sharon.
Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, guys. Well, I know you were asking what it's like
for
people who are living, like, on the edge, and I'm definitely one of those people. I make about $50,000 a year, and I'm a single mother. I'm trying to put my kid through college and, you know, taking out loans and everything. And I don't have any health insurance. So,
whoa.
And
where are you working? Are you working in a place so it doesn't offer the health insurance?
Right.
No, that's just awful.
Yeah, they just don't offer it because I don't know. I don't know what the reason is that he doesn't offer it, but he just doesn't. But, I mean, I've worked at this job for over 7 years, so it's not like, you know, I'm working at some marginal job. I'm working at a steady job. I put in the same number of hours every week, and, you know, it's a normal job, and you would think that health insurance would come with it, but he just doesn't offer it. So
it's just such a shame because, like, you know, what you're telling me is somebody like yourself making $50,000, single mother, is primarily persisting through loans and credit is how people have to get by.
Yeah. Especially where it comes to my daughter's education, yeah. I can afford, like, the day-to-day stuff, but her education is way out of my range, you know.
Right.
But, Sharon, if you have to cut corners, where do you cut?
Well, the health care and health insurance and doctor visits and stuff like that, that's where I cut. And, you know, because I don't need it right now, it just doesn't happen for me. Now, my daughter, she has insurance because I can afford it for her. And, you know, she goes to see the doctor. But my big thing is, you know, I tell my sister, I live with my sister, I tell my sister all the time, you know, if I have a heart attack or something, just close the door and walk away.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're sick, you just kind of suck it up, huh?
Yeah, because I know that one day in an emergency room
is
going to take away every cent of equity I have in my house.
That's
my family's future right there.
Oh, that's
the equity that I have in my house is the only future my family has. And if something happens to me, they'll put a lien on that, and I'll never see a dime of it.
Well,
it's a
horrible reality. Sharon. Thanks for sharing that with us, Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon.
See, this is like, how do we live in a country where this isn't accommodated, where people, just working people, who are struggling to get by? Why isn't her boss, you know, forced to give her health care coverage? Why isn't there?
Because she's got no union in her job. The way you get bosses to do that is to organize the workers and threaten to withhold their services unless you come up with health care.
And why isn't there a health care plan in this country for everybody on a basic level? It's just, it's baffling to me that this woman, if she gets sick, says to her sister that, you know, just
close
let
the
me
door
die
and leave me alone. Yeah.
I want my kids to have at least something left over. That's a horrifying reality that a high percentage of Americans to deal with on a day-to-day basis. How can you have hope or peace of mind or any sense that things are going to get better in this country when you're living like that reality on a day-to-day basis?
Three words, folks. National health care. That's what Hillary Clinton wanted. That's what everybody laughed at her when she tried to provide.
And you know this is going to get worse. You know that after these guys cut and run, which are already preparing to do, this neocon death cult has made a fortune. They've changed legislation that's going to put this country backwards, you know, 30 years. A lot of people are never going to be able to get health care. The repercussions for this are going to last generations, and it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And that's because people voted Republican out of fear.
This is ridiculous. You know, Nick Hornby coming up, my Arsenal brother. We're also going to talk about that protest of The View, and we've got a liberal agenda for you next on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo!
You're listening to Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. I hope you're having an okay Monday today. Lactating mothers unite, lactivists, and their supporters will stage a nurse-in today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of the co-hosts of ABC's show, The View. So now you can take your boobs out with two purposes. If you'd like to go down to the studio at 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York, where the taping of The View takes place, that's at 11 a.m. today. We're going to talk to a friend of mine, Caridwin Morris, who's going to be going down there today. Morning's Edition will broadcast live this Friday from New York Strand Bookstore. It'll be me and Eric Bogosian and mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields joining us this Friday. Other news. Let's get into a little bit of a recap here, Riley. Apparently, the gap between rich and poor has never been greater. If you're making like $70,000 to $100,000, there is no more middle class. You're just the top end of poor people, apparently. And the burden for the primary burden of the taxes will be on your back because people who make $1.6 million, which is about 1/1,000th of the population, 145,000 people, will be putting the tax burden on you because they hide their money.
Well, they hide their money, and Bush's tax policy, despite what he said last year about it helping poor people, actually helps the rich get even richer. The 145,000 richest Americans get 15% of Bush's tax cut. That's 0.1%. Get 15%.
And apparently on Friday, which is the day that if you release news, it means that you don't want anyone to read it, the Pentagon admitted to some Quran abuse, but they made it sound like it was at a children's party. that you know, someone threw some water balloons and another guy accidentally peed on one. And that's all you get with this Pentagon, are lies and spin, because obviously there was a climate within Gitmo that enabled this stuff to happen, and I'm betting that was probably a little worse than they're letting on here. The one guy who did it on purpose, apparently, according to this report, was fired, but everyone else, it was sort of like, whoops, we got threw a balloon and it blew up on the Koran, I'm sorry. And
wait a minute, what does fired from the military mean? Were they sent home?
Well, it says right here, a pattern of unacceptable behavior. He was later fired, and I'm wondering, maybe it was an independent contractor.
Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's not clear in the article, but they did characterize the Koran abuse as not intentional and almost as if it was a bunch of kids playing, which you know can't be right just by looking at some of the pictures and hearing some of the testimony of the type of torture that went on in not only Abu Ghraib, but in also at Gitmo.
You know what? I think that the suits at the Pentagon told General Hood, Brigadier General Hood, who's the guy who came up with this news at 7:15 on a Friday Eastern time, so nobody would cover it. I think they told him what to say. I think they told him, say, all right, say, admit to a little bit of this sort of thing going on, but insist to people that the substance of the Newsweek story is still wrong and that it's not systemic.
Yeah.
That's what I think that was their goal, and I think that's how they're going to try and spin this out.
And also Walmart taking some hits because they say that they don't have enough organic food or high-quality sheets at their outlets and that the bathrooms are unclean. They say Target's beating them out in money. And I think it's because most people don't want to shop at Walmart because of their unfair labor practices, because they destroy local businesses within a town, and they build a town unto themselves on the outskirts of towns and cities and create traffic problems. And I just hope it's because people aren't shopping there.
Well, you know, the next big push is going to be into urban areas. There's already an issue right here in New York about whether a Walmart's going to open.
Come on, where are they going to put a Walmart?
Oh, they got places. Believe me, they got places. They'll buy their way in. They'll buy up lot after lot after lot. And next thing you know, you got a huge airplane hangar full of stuff.
Well, they already put out, you know, Walmart puts those small family businesses like Kmart and Sears right out of business.
Well, those small businesses. Gee, I didn't know that.
It's a joke, right?
All right.
All right. Our guest is the best-selling author of High Fidelity, About a Boy, and How to Be Good, and the memoir Fever Pitch, his new book, A Long Way Down, is out now. It's a pleasure to have Nick Hornby in the studio. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. Fellow Arsenal brother.
Here we go. It's time for soccer talk.
There we go.
I know nothing about it, so I'll just facilitate a conversation between you two.
I can hear people switching off all over New York.
Come on. There's like two or three people that like soccer here. Riley's one of them.
Hey, it's more than that. They had 50,000 people out of Giant Stadium. You know?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it 50? That's all right.
Yeah, for England versus Colombia.
Yeah.
That's not bad. They're trying to get people to like it here. They just can't adjust to it for some reason.
Let me tell you something. The biggest audience they had at Giant Stadium, other than the Pope, was a match between Brazil and the rest of the world. Some years ago, I know I was there.
Oh, yeah, and where I live, the Brazilians get very excited about any Brazilian sport event. So why do you think that? Just out of curiosity, off the cuff, off the topic, why do you think that soccer doesn't appeal to Americans?
All your sports are way too high scoring. I mean, you've got things with hundreds of points, like basketball. And we watch sports where maybe you get no points at all in an hour and a half.
We have that. We have baseball. And I think that
baseball, that would be such a high scoring soccer game. 9-3 and stuff like that.
Yeah. 9-3 would be a high scoring.
2-0, 1-0, 2-0.
Yeah.
So let's set the stage of your new book, A Long Way Down. It sounds like, you know, when I'm reading about the book, that it could tend to be pretty heavy. But apparently it's very comical. You deal with suicidal people.
Yeah, it's set on New Year's Eve, which is one of the nights of the year when suicide rates spike. You know, it's New Year's Eve, Christmas, Valentine's, stuff like that. And these four people have independently gone to this well-known suicide spot in North London, thinking, of course, that they will spend their last moments alone, and they all collide.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is their relationship. They get down off the roof pretty quickly. So the grimmest part is the first couple of pages.
Now, right away, it's made an impact on Johnny Depp, apparently, who thought it was a great book, and he's going to make it a movie.
Yeah, his production company's bought the movie rights, which is cool.
Now, when you make a film, like I saw About a Boy and I saw High Fidelity, which were great.
Yeah.
Now, how much involvement do you have as, you know, as the writer of the book?
Well, people are always respectful and nice about it, and they want to include me. And after a little while, I just start to get really bored because it takes so long. It's like 5 years from book to movie.
Yeah.
And they're saying, oh, here's another draft, here's another draft. Yeah. And you're on the 15th draft. I've got no idea what the difference between this draft and the last one is. And at that point, I say, you know what? You know best.
I got to go.
Yeah, that's right. Things to do.
Good.
Well, I'm curious if you have a sense of what makes your work so adaptable. I mean, people, a lot of your work gets put on film. Why?
It's actually a bit of a mystery to me, because something like High Fidelity, which is set inside somebody's head, inside a record store, it doesn't kind of scream out cinematic. And I think that maybe the generation of filmmakers, you know, people around about my age or younger, really respond to the material in the book, and they kind of twist it out of shape to make it a film. It's an emotional response rather than anything in the material itself.
Well, I know I relate to it, because I think there's a generational thing when you're dealing with people who, you know, who love music, who have their own dreams for themselves and don't see their life panning out the way they want it to, and they're smart people. You go into some sort of, you know, existential crisis mode of, where do you fit in? When does adolescence end?
I mean, people keep saying about Rob in that book that he doesn't want to grow up, and I think it's more complicated.
Oh, definitely. There's a question of, how do you grow up? I mean, you know, if you look at people my age, I'm 41.
Yeah.
And I see some guys.
Look at you.
Yeah, I know. Look at you. Exactly.
I got to say, listeners, he's got these khaki shorts on, his baggy gray T-shirt.
I mean, when do I stop dressing like this?
But you don't need to stop.
I know. I understand what you're saying, but there was a, you know, you look at historical photographs of people, and you can definitely tell, well, that guy's a man.
Absolutely.
You know, he's dressed like a man.
Yeah, he's got the jacket, the tie.
Yeah, exactly.
You had kids when you were 21, because the women wanted kids when they were 21, or maybe. But,
thought they had to.
They thought they had to.
Culturally, that was what was going on. Now,
Now there's this almost 20-year gap between, you know, becoming an adult in terms of voting and so on, and what happens, you know, with families. And you've got 20 years to fill of nothing going on.
Well, and also I think a lot of people I know don't have kids. They don't have kids when they're young. And like I said, I'm 41. I don't have kids. I don't know if that's going to happen. I've lost a lot of friends to kids. You know, and I think that there is something about your character, certainly in the film version of About a Boy, where, you know, there's a selfishness that I think our generation has, because we have high expectations. And what happens is you all these years get away from you, and then you're sort of like, oh, well, now what?
Well, see, that's another thing with About a Boy, that, that guy's described as selfish. But there is nobody else. He's got no one else to look after. Why would you? What does it matter if you're selfish in that situation?
Right, but
there's a great moral pressure not to be like that.
Right. And then there becomes a personal pressure when you're sort of like, wow, I'm alone.
Yeah, what is that?
We're going to continue this conversation with Nick Hornby after this. Stay with us here on Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Cancel your subscription and keep the video, booklet, and magazine free.
So call 800-423-3100. That's 800-423-3100.
20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Sedition, which on the break could be called Soccer Talk. Nick Hornby is in studio with us. He's new book out, A Long Way Down. Of course, the author of High Fidelity and About a Boy and Fever Pitch. And a one-time music critic and, you know, lifelong music head, yes?
Yeah.
Do you know what's on the...
goes on.
Yeah, does it? So I guess you're familiar with what's at the top of the singles charts in England right now, aren't you? Can we hear that, Chris?
I bought all these copies.
Now, so this is being out Coldplay.
Yeah. 4-1, apparently.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow. That's the second week in a row.
And then I thought to myself, who the hell would want to have Coldplay as their ringer? You start crying. This is called, what's it called? Crazy Frog Axel F. It's a ringtone.
Yes.
That apparently is outselling Coldplay, whose record is outselling everyone.
Yes.
Now,
it makes me very proud.
Yeah, it makes me proud, too. I find Coldplay draining.
What about Crazy Frog? Is that doing it it for you, though?
Oh, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, it's okay. I mean, you know, the riff is old, but I think it's a great indication of where we are culturally, don't you? That a ringtone's more popular than a record. But I read an article. Did you read that New York Times piece on Coldplay?
It went after them, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it basically said, like, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I'm not on board.
Basically what he said.
Do you like them?
They've become a pretty ubiquitous outfit at home. I mean, you can't go in a Gap or a body shop without hearing this music.
Well, we had a conversation before. It just seems that there are certain bands that once they get their groove, make sure that they, you know, once it's defined, to never go out of it if it's proven to make money. And that seems to be sort of what they're doing, doesn't it?
Yeah, although sometimes I admire bands who, you know, do something really well and stick with that, as opposed to go off and make a rock opera or work with the Trans Symphony Orchestra and Rainforest. But I don't want that. I want you to play your guitars again.
There you go.
I understand what you're saying, but sometimes isn't it sort of as someone who's a creative person, can't you indulge them a risk or two and then just hopefully they return back to what
they did? Well, I think the best way of doing it is to try and do what you do and add to it and start to evolve a little bit through.
Right.
A tradition rather than just suddenly go crazy.
Right. Maybe add a rain stick in or a didgeridoo, but don't, you know, go full on.
A ringtone.
Yeah, a ringtone.
A ringtone. There you go.
So let's talk a little bit more about the new book, A Long Way Down.
Can I just say something about accidental peeing?
Yeah.
I was thinking about accidental peeing.
In relation to the Quran story.
Sure. How close have you come in all your years to accidentally peeing on a sacred text?
Well,
because me, not close, I have to say.
None that I can remember. Maybe when I was an infant.
It was he had a lot of bad luck, the accidental peeing guy, didn't he?
Through a bit. I think back in the day when I was drinking a little too much and staying in hotel rooms, if I was really partying.
Yeah.
Hey, that looked like a urinal to me.
If the drawer with the Gideons was open, you know what I mean? There might be trouble, you know.
Oh, I'm going to run now. You're in trouble. I know about this country. You just talked about peeing on the Gideon Bible.
Well, you know.
That's why he's moving around. He doesn't want God to strike him dead where he's sitting.
It's not God I'm worried about.
It's yourself.
It's your citizens.
Come on. It's just a book, right?
No, I wanted to ask him about our citizens.
Well, go ahead.
Because you go back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
You're here in New York. You're in London. How have Americans changed? I get a sense that a lot of people in England think that Americans have changed, particularly since the advent of George W. Bush, and in particular since the election last year.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things to say. One is that as a writer, when I come here and I'm on book tour, I never, ever meet anybody, you know, in bookstores who come to readings who would have voted for Bush. So it's hard for me to pick up a sense of it being a different
Sometimes
country.
We don't know where they're hiding either. You never know when you're surrounded by them.
But, you know, we're a godless country in England. Mm-hmm. It has no influence
Good for you.
On our lives in any way whatsoever.
Great.
And I think that's the thing that people are kind of most interested or even perturbed by is the strength of religious feeling in the right here.
Scares us. It really does. The Christo-fascist zombie brigade is the biggest threat to democracy that I know of. We're talking to Nick Hornby. His new book is A Long Way Down. So how does this the story unfold in the book? You get these people that it's New Year's Eve. They're all contemplating suicide, and there's two men and two women.
Yeah.
And they come off the roof, and what unfolds throughout? What do we learn? I'm sorry. That's a bad question.
No messages. There's no message in this book.
Well, I mean, they got off the roof, didn't they?
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, I think about suicide myself, but that's just because I find it relaxing.
Well, the first part of the book is the night. So they end up at a party.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it's really kind of getting better in their heads very, very incrementally. And now the idea partly was to take characters who are in a bad place and lead them towards the light without being sentimental or twisting anything out of shape too much.
Through each other, through relationship?
A little bit.
Yeah.
They're horrible to each other throughout the book.
Though. Oh, that's good. That's funny. Suicided people being horrible to each other.
Exactly.
How else are they going to be? Are they?
No loving, no bonding. No,
how about self-pity? Is there any self-pity?
Oh, yeah.
But is there hope at the end?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, see, that's good. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yay, hope at the end.
Yeah, I'm an eternal optimist.
So now, if the film gets made, is Johnny Depp planning on playing one of these characters?
I think that he's got his eye on one of the people. But
which one?
I don't know.
You don't know which
one? Martin, who's the obnoxious breakfast TV, breakfast TV.
Breakfast. Oh, yeah. So it's a morning TV show host?
Yeah, who's been to prison for sleeping with a 15-year-old.
Oh, okay. Well, that's compelling. Yeah. I should go finish. I got to go finish the book. It's called A Long Way Down. Nick Hornby has been our guest. It's available on morningsedition.com, I imagine, for a slight discount. It was great talking to you.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic, man.
Thanks for coming. We're going to come back with the lactivists.
Yes.
Yes, yeah. It's time to take your boobs out for a good cause this morning.
I'm going topless all day today.
There you go. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Secure the ammunition dumps. It just goes on and on.
Jerry Springer on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hiya.
It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. Hope you're having an okay Monday morning. God, it took me a while to get my head together.
Yeah.
But you couldn't tell. It was just going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, the sets. Lactating mothers unite. Lactivists are called. The lactating mothers and their supporters will stage a nursing today to protest the anti-breastfeeding attitude of a co-host of ABC's show The View, and the comments made on that show that nursing in public is, quote, gross and disgusting. Who the hell are they to judge anybody? Anyways, the protest is at 11 a.m. at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue here in New York City, if you're around. That's where they're taping The View live. So lactating mothers will be there lactating and proudly displaying their breastfeeding in public, I hope. Who the hell?
You hope?
Well, no, I mean, yeah. Hey, it's a good cause there, Riley.
It is. I fully agree with you. I try to be as in my old age as open minded as possible about these things, and really, like, if I see something like that happening, I don't look. I really try not to look or salivate.
There's the key word. Try. Now the thing is that there. I know it's a perfectly human thing, and it's good for the baby, and it should be not that big a deal. But you know, we have attitudes in this country. You can't help but look. Why aren't you going to look for a minute? There's nothing wrong with it. I'm sure that people have been looking at mothers breastfeeding since the beginning of time, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be accepted and okay. Most women do it very discreetly.
Yes.
And for these people to condescend, for Star, you know, Star Jones,
who
just in public non-lactating is difficult to deal with, and Barbara Walters. I mean, who the hell is she? I mean, to even make judgments on how regular people live their lives. I mean, what are they supposed to do? It's just she's awful. She's awful. I mean, could you imagine that person? I mean, I think she has a child. I don't know, but
does she? I don't know.
I think she does, but could you imagine being her maternal to anybody?
No.
It's just baffling to me that these people would condescend to women. You know, and it's a woman's show that they would say something like this is heinous. You know, earlier today we had one of my favorite guests on, Mort Mortensen, with the morning remembrance, and I'd like to share that with some of our listeners that might not have heard it earlier. Can we do that, Chris? Right now, unfortunately, it's not that time of week when we hear Morning's Edition. Take a moment at this time of our sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of a grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning's Edition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Oh. Thurl Ravenscroft, voice of Tony the Tiger. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice... I'm sorry.
Was choked up?
Yeah. Thurl Ravenscroft, whose booming voice of Tony the Tiger helped condemn two generations of American children to a life of high fructose corn syrup and tragic obesity, is now buried in a grave. After leaving the Air Force in 1947, Thurl went to Hollywood to form a vocal quartet called the Mellomen, which performed with Danny Kaye, who Laurence Olivier said was gay.
Oh, no.
Friends recall how Kellogg's cereal came in 1952, requesting he write something for the new character, Tony the Tiger. After thinking about it for a while, a World War II vet came up with the words that would immortalize him in the world of advertising. Human entrails. Oh, gosh. You're still wearing that eyeliner?
No, man.
You know what makeup? I'm allergic to that makeup.
I don't even know why I do it, man. It's because I'm on the radio. No one sees it.
You see yourself. That's important. A religious man, Ravenscroft, began narrating annual presentations at the Crystal Cathedral in Southern California. Was known for ending his show with the phrase, Kellogg's Frosted Flakes. They are great. But not as great as the Lord Jesus Christ, who died on the cross for your sins, dirty heathens.
You all right, man?
Yeah.
Maybe you ought to blow your nose.
Oh, God. You have a tissue?
Yeah, here you go.
Thank you.
Oh, man. It's that time of year, I guess.
Oh, it's, yeah. Hey, it's getting to be summer. Those who worked with Thurl Ravenscroft often called him unpretentious, while those who lived next door to him often called him loud. Men called the police whenever he was having sex. Ravenscroft requested his body be enjoyed every morning with skim milk and sliced bananas.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh, you've been inadvertently spraying the urine on the Quran in here?
I think I might have a little bit through that vent over there, but it was an accident.
I'm allergic to urine.
Yeah, you're pretty bad this morning.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
This has been Mort Mortensen saying, who's chopping onions?
Oh, man. Mort Mortensen. That was from a little earlier today. Hey, look, folks, we had such a great turnout on Friday over at City Bakery.
Thank you.
Really appreciate everyone coming down. What a cast of characters our fans are, let me tell you. All different types of people. Very, very interesting. They came up and they touched Mark Riley.
They shook hands.
They
shook
hands, took some pictures.
You know what was great was that guy Gabe, the guy that sent us the CDs?
Yeah, yeah.
He was there.
There's another package of CDs from Gabe that he left us. And then there's a woman who came up to me and goes, I'm a cat person, too. and then there was a guy who had the John Lennon glasses and the long hair and the beard, with the sign. He was just sort of like, is this a protest? Are we here to protest?
Now.
And we had the cast of characters. We had the Cardinal. We had Lawton Small showed up. Did very well. Everyone was very happy to see Lawton.
Johnny K Street was
Johnny
there.
Johnny K Street. People were very excited to see him. And we're going to do it again this week at the Strand Bookstore at the corner of Broadway and 12th Street from 6 to 9 a.m. We're going to have playwright and actor Eric Bogosian, New York City mayoral candidate C. Virginia Fields is joining us, and we're going to give away a bunch of stuff. We're going to hang out with the books at the Strand, which is a New York institution. So certainly like to see some people come down. Probably some of the same people will come down, but that's okay. I like hanging out with you.
Yeah.
Also, we've been talking about this, the lactating mothers. We're going to be talking in momentarily. Who's this on the phone right now? Here we go. Bennett in Brooklyn. What do you got going there, Bennett?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Right. What's on your mind?
I was down in Gainesville, Florida. I lived down there years back, and a similar protest like this happened with friends of mine. Some women were breastfeeding in a mall. Security guard came over, said, listen, you can't do that here.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back the next day with about 20 other breastfeeding moms. They all sat down. They all whipped it out and breastfed right there in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I mean, it just shows the solid. I mean, it was. Look, all right, it wasn't great from that point of view.
What point of view was that, Bennett?
Well, the point of view, the Morning Zoo point of view.
Yeah,
okay.
No, I mean, I was thinking of coming on and saying, like, hey, I still breastfeed today because I didn't get it when I was a kid. You know, this kind
yeah,
of,
yeah, yeah.
You know, but.
I'm glad you didn't say it, though.
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah.
Kind of
yeah.
So, but I didn't say that, though.
No, you know, I know. No, you just were thinking about saying it.
Yeah, right. I was thinking about it. But you know, that attitude's kind of the problem, too. You know, most men, their first orientation to a woman's breast is a sexual orientation.
Yeah, we're hypersexualized,
Yeah, you know, we don't see it as, what it's for, its function. And I think that's one of the greatest virtues of women is that nurturing function. And if we, you know, did more to honor it than to shun it, maybe we wouldn't have these wars. Maybe we wouldn't have the kind of problems we had. Maybe we'd be a society more interested in nurturing.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's an interesting point. And I think you're right. I think a lot of it also has to do with just, innate discomfort. It's like, I appreciate your call, Bennett. I mean, it is sexualizing on some level, and though the breasts are used for nursing, they're also used to, they're attractive. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So, the real truth of the matter is, I think people are just uncomfortable. Katie, how are you? What's on your mind, Katie?
Hi,
Brooklyn?
Katie.
Hi there. Well, what's on my mind is that I can't believe all the same people that claim to be so pro-family and so pro-baby won't let me feed my baby.
Yeah.
The way God intended me to? Really?
Yeah.
I'm furious.
Yeah, no. I
have a beautiful baby, and I take him out. I shouldn't have to never leave the house.
That's right. No, you should be able to breastfeed wherever you want. It's just people are uncomfortable with themselves, so they got to make everyone uncomfortable. That's the heart of moralizing in this country.
Because they would starve my child.
Are you going to go down to this protest?
I would really like to, but I've got a little bit. If I can take him on the subway and get there, I will. Should I make a sign? What should it say?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that just the presence alone. The breasts and the baby will be enough.
I'm going to take my boobs and my baby on the subway, and I'm going to...
Okay, it's at 11 a.m. at the ABC Studios at 67th Street in Columbus. Thanks for calling us, Katie.
I gotta get moving.
Thanks, Katie. Now you're sending lactivists?
Yeah, lactivists. We're going to talk to Caridwen Morris in just a few minutes. You can go to her website, thenewmom.com, and link up to the protest site. Caridwen is putting together a book with her partner, her writing partner, she's actually married to my friend, about new moms and about pregnancy and birth and about the issues of being a young mother. So they're collecting stories at thenewmom.com. If you want to go there and check that out, she will be on the phone with us next. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Yes, it's 49 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. This is Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We are reaching out to lactating mothers today to go down to ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue, at 11 a.m. today to protest the views Barbara Walters and Star Jones for condescending and saying that breastfeeding was gross and disgusting. On the phone right now is my friend and also the co-creator and author of thenewmom.com, which is she's going to explain a little bit about that to us and also talk to us a little bit about the protest this morning. Caridwen Morris, how are you?
I'm great.
Good morning.
I'm glad to hear you guys are talking about this.
Are you breastfeeding now?
I'm not breastfeeding right now. I got the husband to take the child out of the house.
So this, how many people do you think are going to show up at this thing?
You know, I have absolutely no idea, but
yeah.
I mean, you guys have been talking about it a lot. Maybe some New York moms will get down there. I think it could be quite big. I mean, with the logistics sheet has information about how the police have been informed and where the bathrooms are. I mean, it could be kind of a...
So what do you think most people's problem with breastfeeding is, really, and what are the facts?
What are the facts? Well, the facts, it's like your caller, Katie, just said.
Yeah.
I mean, if the American Academy of Pediatricians
right.
says that women should breastfeed for 1 year.
Yeah.
6 months, the first 6 months, exclusive breastfeeding means nothing else, no other food or formula. So is a breastfeeding mom supposed to stay, in the nursery for a year?
No.
I mean,
of course not.
And so the problem is the doctors and even laws in this country that protect women breastfeeding in public, are all saying, hey, great, go breastfeed. It's great for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good for the mother, too. It's
uh-huh.
good for the mother's body. I mean, it helps prevent breast cancer and ovarian cancer. It's great for getting back into shape after pregnancy.
Yep.
It's wonderful for the kid. It gives them all kinds of immunity.
And if you don't do it, you end up like me. I wasn't breastfed, Caridwen.
Well, I think you're doing just fine.
I don't know.
And I think there are also, there are a lot of formula-fed folks out there, and it's not really about that. This is sort of more about, you know, protecting women who choose to breastfeed and letting, really letting them do it. Because part of letting them do it and just, you know, following their doctor's orders means being able to breastfeed, you know, when
in public.
You need to.
Right. And the only real it's only stigmatized because people are uncomfortable with it.
People are definitely uncomfortable. I mean, boobs are sexy. Boobs are sexualized.
That's, you don't got to tell me.
Yes. You guys have definitely made that point. And I think that's great. I think the boobs are wonderful. And
yeah.
I think that boobs should also be useful.
Yeah.
We've got to be able to...
Use your boobs.
Use your boobs. And boobs are for... I mean, if a guy thinks that boobs are gorgeous, that's wonderful. They're also for breastfeeding.
How did this whole discussion and the view, how did this evolve to the point where they said it was horrifying and disgusting?
You know, I have to admit that I did not see the show. I mean, I understand why everyone's kind of talking about it.
Yeah.
And so we thought that it was important to get involved in the nursing, just because when people... I mean, since the medical establishment and the law are on the side of breastfeeding, it seems like this is really a cultural problem. So when people in the media get, like Barbara Walters and Star Jones, talk about breastfeeding in this kind of negative way, it is going to affect the way, you know, all of us think about breastfeeding, and we need to stop. People need to stop doing that.
And you know, it's like you breastfeed in public, and most people who breastfeed in public are, you know, they're discreet. It's not like they're trying to make a scene or anything. And I imagine that, you know, after a guy ogles for a second, he adjusts, and that's it, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not a big exhibitionist gesture. I mean,
right.
You know, a woman feeding her kid is focused on. Well, basically, a woman feeding a baby is focused on getting the baby to stop crying. It's like, you got a crying baby, you put the baby on the boob, and I had some inhibitions, I mean, as most women do, I think, about, you know, having to breastfeed in front of, you know, your father-in-law or, well, in one case, the entire end train. But, but you've got to get the baby to be quiet, and you lose your inhibitions for a minute, and it is kind of a discreet, you know, act.
Have you ever had to say, hey, buddy, just take it easy?
No, I haven't had to say that. But, you know, the thing is that if there's a guy who's really perving and staring at your boobs when you're breastfeeding, I bet that guy would be staring at your boobs even if you weren't breastfeeding.
Yeah, even if they weren't out, you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so quickly, before we run out of time with you, thenewmom.com, you and your partner, Rebecca, are putting together a book, and you want to tell people a little bit about the site real quick?
Yeah, sure. No, we're collecting stories on the site. It's a place where people can come tell their stories about being a mom. I mean, we really just want to get the many, many, many points of view about how to become a mother and how to mother your children. And we want to hear from real moms. And we also are writing about different, news items like this nursing and other controversial or just interesting, bits and pieces of
that have to do with pregnancy, birth, or the process of being a new mom.
Yeah.
All right, so that's thenewmom.com. Caridwyn Morris, it was great talking to you.
Thanks.
And I'm going to plug the protest again today, and go get your kid back from Sam.
Okay.
All right,
great.
Talk
Thanks
to you later.
Guys.
Yeah.
So that's the Lactivists, Lactating Mothers, today at 11 o'clock at ABC Studios, 67th Street and Columbus Avenue in New York. Go to it. Whip them out, feed your kid, and make a point. There's a purpose to this. I don't know. You know, I think it's pretty fascinating.
I just hope this wasn't a ploy on the part of The View to get more ratings. You know, sometimes they do
stuff
certainly, like that.
No, come on.
That
this would be
they say something that would anger people like this, and they know they get a protest, and they know they get covered. Because there was a protest.
We just got a classic. Oh, yeah! All right, now it's time for this. What are we doing here? Oh, yeah. I get confused because we got the liberal agenda only comes in once a week now from the Streisand compound. Here's Mondays. That's today for the week. Here's your liberal agenda. Write these down. One, go to a cafe and order a six-egg omelet. Tell the waitress you're adopting embryos. Two, protest the horror of the latest prison abuse pictures by dimming your photo iPod to half luminosity. Three, to ensure that the Downing Street memo gets read by millions of Americans, ask Oprah to add it to her book club.
4. Get as much information as you can about the Iraqi insurgents' giant underground bunker. Find out if anyone there created underground comics or underground house music or any other outsider art. 5. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Dave Chappelle was in South Africa, all right, being held against his will, man, and having his wife threatened by the CIA. Wake up, sheeple. I got a joke for you. Knock, knock, who's there? The free speech police. You have the right to remain silent, and you better start using it or you're canceled for good. That's what happened there, my friend.
All right.
Good show there, Riley.
Good show today.
Tomorrow.
Chris Hedges.
I'm psyched.
The one of our favorites.
He's great. He wrote a book on the Ten Commandments and why they're important to people who believe and people who don't believe.
And we got a brother from another planet. Lawton Small.
All right. Good show, Riley.
Good show. See you tomorrow. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America.